This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Alec Mop, a Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mop. I'm an actor, comedian, and haunted soul.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a psychotherapist and multicultural counselor. It's hard to follow you. trying to introduce myself after something like that.
I know. The show's Hot Mess, so I'm always working through something.
A little messy. Yeah.
I'm always kind of like, okay, what's this about? We had a talk about being in alignment on one of our shows, and that kind of has stuck with me about being in alignment, because I think I've spent a majority of my life out of alignment with myself.
Okay, what does that mean for you? How are you defining alignment?
Alignment is kind of like being in line with my own values, or even knowing that I have values.
Oh, okay.
Like I think that I spent my 20s and my 30s not knowing my own values, or not knowing that I was that I was an entity to be valued as a person.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah, understanding your own self, your own worth, your own values, and making sure that the steps that you're taking in life actually align with those things.
Exactly. And so because I didn't know my value was based on achievement. It was always based on, I was valuable if I got this guy to like me. I was valuable if I did a good job and I got a job. But see, what happens with that when your value is defined by something outside of yourself, when those things go away, everything falls apart.
Yes, fully. Yeah. Because the truth is that for all of us, we are automatically valuable. It is our birthright, right? So inherently we are good enough and we deserve love and belonging. And so when we do anything in our lives that's out of step with understanding what that is, our own value, then it fucks us up and we're totally off alignment. And then things don't really kind of go and flow and work out really kind of in the best ways.
Right. And it's kind of like, I didn't understand that until I was like in my 30s, really, that I was like, oh, I was journaling one day and I was like, and I just wrote the words, I'm a good person.
Aww.
Like I'd never said that about I'm not so bad. I'm a good person, but it turned into, and therefore, as a good person, I deserve this.
Yes.
As a good person, that was a radical thought to me, because I didn't grow up with that kind of introspection.
Yeah. What's interesting is that for me, mine looked very different than yours. Mm. My out of alignment was not really trying. So I didn't really put a whole lot of effort into very much in life. I just kind of like got by.
I don't know that, Matthew.
Yeah, really. Kind of like the earliest part of my life, I was not like an overachiever. I was not a hustler. I was not that person. I was the person that was like, yeah, whatever. I'm just like here to have a good time and just kind of like chill. And what I didn't realize was so much of that kind of approach to things was because I was so afraid to make the effort that if I made the effort, I wouldn't do well. I wouldn't be okay. And then I would just be faced with what I feared underneath the surface, that I was actually inadequate. So I didn't even want to test that out and be confronted with that.
That's why I don't sing. Like,
oh,
I always
really?
I always sang in high school. I was in all the musicals, and then I moved to New York, and then everybody I met was the most amazing trained singer I'd ever met.
God.
And then I'd audition for Broadway musicals and I'd hear the person singing in a room. And I was like, if I can't sing like that, I'm not going to sing at all.
Oh my God. I was just telling our producer before we started this show that just a little while ago, I was in my room and I just was like in the mood to sing. And I just started singing, you know, Pentatonix, the Christmas song, that it's Christmas for me or whatever.
Yeah.
I just started wailing and like singing that song and I was like killing it. And I was so in the moment. And then I kind of like finished and I was like, woo. And then I heard my neighbor who shares my bedroom wall with me in the other room. And I was like, ah, he heard me.
And singing to me is so personal. You're so vulnerable.
Personal. I was so vulnerable. That's why I just kind of like crumbled and like ran into the other room.
So you kind of needed to hang back. And was it a thing of like, if I tried, I might not be good enough? Or is it like, was it a way of avoiding attention?
It was all of it. Avoiding attention. I didn't want attention. I didn't want to, you know, try anything that actually I thought maybe I'd be interested in because I just didn't want to fail. Mm. And it really wasn't until I think when I turned 20, I dated this guy who was really kind of like my first love. His name was also Matt. So if you can consider that, Matt and Matt.
Ew. When people say go fuck yourself, it's really just an expression.
It was just a shared name. We did not look like each other. We weren't those gays. Mm-hmm. But anyway, and this was a person who I was dating who was, who had such this kind of long history of knowing exactly what he wanted to do. He was an actor and he was in like all of the kind of like, you know, acting classes and theater from a very young age. And he was like on a path. And I never felt more insecure in my life. And that's when I realized that that was the first time that I really confronted for me, the realization that I didn't know what lit me up. I didn't know what my passion was. I didn't know what brought me joy. And I felt so insecure about it. And that's what really kind of started me on my journey to figure out really what it was. So I then could get in alignment with that.
Oh, what brings you joy, Matthew? I'm curious.
This, I mean, honestly, there's a number of things. So singing very privately, not to anybody else.
Singing privately brings you joy.
Dancing. Mm-hmm. I love dancing, like really. And then also cooking. I love cooking. That's why I have that's why I have this tattoo on my arm. I'm showing you. It's a sprig of thyme on my forearm.
Are you kidding me? How did I not know that was there?
I don't know, Alec. You never pay attention to me. I'm always trying to get your attention.
I know.
But anyway, so all of those things, but really more than anything, this is why I love doing this so much. This kind of podcast, talking about mental health stuff, being a psychotherapist, like truly is my sweet spot. I'm so Britney Spears in the zone when I'm doing this stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love feeding people. I love having people over for dinner. And I love a huge dinner party. There's like that's the most joyful I am when my house is full of people and it's so loud and everybody's laughing. Yeah. I'm just kind of like,
hosting.
That just makes me happy.
Yeah, I love that too.
Being a host. Yeah. And sometimes a parasite, but being a host.
what was the thing that helped you? I know that you were saying that you kind of journaled down and you realized that you're good enough. Mm-hmm. How did you start to, in very kind of practical ways, how did you start to then align what you did?
I had to break up with every terrible man. I had to stop. That was at the height of my sex and love addiction. Yeah. I had to stop doing those things. It was kind of like cold turkey that it was like, I had to stop. I realized that I was acting out of a very low opinion of myself.
Yeah.
And I had to kind of, I had to have standards.
Nobody, what's that?
This is the unfortunate thing about me. And I'm admitting it. I was one of those people who had to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there were people in my life who were like, you deserve better. There were actually people in my life.
Yes.
And I was talking about this horrible man that I was with and a really good friend of mine. We got into a fight because I kept on seeing him. And she basically said, well, it doesn't sound like you've gotten your ass kicked hard enough.
Ooh, yeah.
And I was like, how could you say that? He has blah, blah, blah. And then, but it was, I got mad because it was true.
Yes.
Like, it wasn't enough that he was a shitty guy. It was that I couldn't stop seeing him.
Totally. And that's what they say in 12-step, right? Like, we'll go ahead and keep doing more research, right? And so you find out what you need to know.
Your best thinking got you here.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, all you true crime fans. This is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Well, we haven't centered in on one subject today. We're kind of all over the place.
No, I mean, we're talking about,
self-esteem.
Self-esteem, but really kind of like alignment, right? Overachievement as being a part of that. Detaching as being a part of not aligning.
Okay.
Alignment. I love that.
Alignment?
Alignment. Is that what we're talking about?
Okay. The subject for today is alignment. And I can't think of a better person to talk about alignment with than our guest today.
I know. I'm so excited about our guest today too. She's a comedian, a writer, and an actress. You have seen her as a favorite panelist on Chelsea Lately, of course. And she's loved for both of her starring as Colette on The Mindy Project and as Dougie on Life in Pieces.
She has a hilarious Netflix special called Sweet and Salty, which love you it. Have to watch if you have to. It's so good.
It's so
and
good.
And you could see her. She's such a good writer. And you could see her in the Oscar-nominated movie, Chick Fight, along with yours truly, nominated for Best Actor, if you haven't heard. I didn't write this intro.
It's great.
I actually believed it for a second. I was like, we've been nominated for an Oscar. She's funny as hell. A great friend of mine. I'm so thrilled she's here. Please welcome to the program, Fortune Feimster.
Yay!
Hi, guys.
Hey, Fortune.
Thanks so much for doing the show. Yes. On the cover of People Magazine, you had a...
on the cover?
You had a media moment. No, it's like it was all over Instagram and Facebook and everything. And it said People Magazine, the report. I saw the tweet of you at your wedding.
Yeah, it was, I guess, because not a lot of people are getting married in a pandemic. They were like, we'll put it in People Magazine.
Yeah.
That was huge, though, because this is where I went. At seeing you on the cover of People Magazine with your beautiful wife.
Well, not on the cover, but we were.
But it
in
said
the
People on. It looked like it was. Let's say it was the cover.
We'll say it was the cover.
In my version of the story, you're on the cover.
Oscar nominated movie.
Yes, Oscar nominated
People cover
actor on the cover of People. It brought me back to like being in Hollywood in the 90s and at the supermarket on Ralph's and Sunset and seeing Ellen DeGeneres on the cover of Time. And and her saying, yep, I'm gay. And how that was like such a monumental thing. And we flash forward and People Magazine is reporting about your wedding. And it's nobody is raising an eyebrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I mean, most people aren't raising an eyebrow. If you looked on the People Magazine comments, it's like, oof, there's still quite a bit of...
Do you read the comments? Ooh. Do you read the comments?
I don't normally read the comments, but... Jax will be like, oh my God, I can't believe what this person said. I'm like, I didn't read the comments. Don't tell me.
What are some of the worst things that people were saying? I'm curious.
I mean, for the most part, it's not even a thing. We got so much love and so many congratulations.
As you should.
Yeah,
from
for sure.
All over. And so that far outweighs any hate. But you know, online is all full of people
successful
or unhappy. Yeah,
totally.
Just a lot, you know, there was a lot of religious things about God and not approving.
You make the baby Jesus cry.
Like that.
That was my intention.
You just gotta take in stride.
Well, Fortune, I love that though. Like even like me asking you, right? Like kind of like digging for a little dirt, but you keep such kind of like a positive air about you. And I have to tell you that I saw you when you were like touring for the Sweet and Salty special.
I saw you
over at the Improv. But I went and saw you and was dying laughing the whole time. But I loved it. Like your comedy is so good. And also you are able to be so funny while also being so positive and light. And it like doesn't come across as like, you know, kind of like cheesy or anything. You leave your set feeling so good. Like you're dying laughing and also feel good at the same time.
Oh, that's nice to hear.
Yes.
I think that's just where my point of view comes from. It comes from a more positive place. I tend to see life with the glass half full naturally, and I wake up pretty positive. I'm very lucky because I know not everyone chemically gets that.
And, chemicals.
This is me without chemicals. My vices are cheeseburgers and milkshakes. But when it comes to just, you know, my outlook on life, I tend to err on the side of positivity. So I think that naturally when I think of jokes and think of stories, it has that influence. Pushing that story forward. Mm-hmm. I don't like to be, I mean, I can certainly be sarcastic and I can be mean-ish, you know, it's still in a silly way. Even if I'm trying to be like jokingly mean, I almost immediately I'm like, just kidding, I'm just kidding.
Your onstage persona is all about affability.
I want people to feel good after they see a show. They've come out to, they've spent money, they're taking their time to see a show. I don't mm-hmm. I'm not the comic that's there to like rile them up or to right. point out the bad things happening in the world. I want to be the escape.
Yeah, right. you can feel that too. And I did. Was there, I know that you said that you're just kind of like naturally organically like that. Do you mm-hmm. think that there was anything from, you know, earlier in your life that really actually helped shape that perspective and that practice?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, you know, like everybody, things weren't always easy. You know, my parents divorced pretty early on. My mom was a teacher raising three kids on a teacher salary. And so we struggled a lot with money and making ends meet. And, mm-hmm. you know, but I was lucky because we had a roof over our head and I clearly had food on the table. So, you know, you can't like, in comparison to other people, we had what we needed to have, but you know, we went through our share of hard times and loss. I lost people very close to me early on. And, and so the first part of that first earlier part of my life seemed filled with so many challenges mm-hmm. that I think that once I moved to LA, and it was challenging too, it was a hard road to try to make this career happen. But I think because I had overcome all those challenges early on, it gave me this perspective of like, you can figure it out. You can handle this. There's whatever life throws at you, you've been through those hard things and you are now equipped to handle.
Yeah, but you had resilience. That mm-hmm. adversity had given you that outlook. I had, my mother died in 1994, I had a deep, deep depression and unemployment at the same time while mm-hmm. grieving my mother. I moved to LA. My boyfriend dumped me. My mother died. And a good friend stole a lot of money from me all at the same time.
Oh, man, that sucks.
So, but would I want to go through it again? No. But mm-hmm. what that time did for me was when shit happens, because that's what life is, it's not that big a deal to me anymore. I have a sense of there's a beginning and a middle and an end to this.
Yeah.
This isn't the end.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you got to go through hard times to know how to get over hard times. Mm-hmm. When I was coming up in LA and I had certain friends that had never experienced hardship. And suddenly they were getting rejected because, you know, LA, Hollywood, it's all rejection. It's all.
I saw La La Land. Did you see that movie? She comes to Los Angeles and she doesn't work for 3 years. It was shocking.
But you do see in the people I came up with who had never mm-hmm. experienced hard times or had never been told no, had never had money issues. The rejection was so difficult for them. A lot of them moved back home or gave up. Or so I am again like you. I wouldn't want to relive those things, but I'm glad that I went through it because I feel like it did sort of give me this thicker skin that helped me, you know, hang in there with this business when it was, you know, telling me no constantly.
Totally. Yeah. Well, you have to have the experience before you can even know what to do with it and how to spin it. Right. And I have to tell you, I work with a lot of people and there's a lot of people who have gone through some, you know, shit in their lives.
Yeah.
But also, you know, have struggled to figure out how to shape a more positive perspective and how to be able to move their lives in a better way. And I say that almost like really as like credit to you and to, you know, whatever experiences helped shape you or how you've been able to move through your own life, because you've had the experience, but you also were the one to help really kind of like frame things in the way that you're just talking about it now, which is amazing and motivating for you to keep being successful.
Well, you can either use it as a motivator or you can become a victim.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to go the victim route because I've seen that up close with certain people in my life, and I don't think it does them any favors.
And you can hear it right away. I can hear it right away with somebody who's victim-y because it's everything. Yes. They don't own anything. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about your, I love seeing you perform because you do have, you on stage, you have ownership of all of you. Like, I love your opening line. It always makes me laugh. I've seen you do it a whole bunch of times. Hello, my name is Fortune. And I'm a woman.
And the way, for my half hour special.
And the way you say it, it always changes the temperature of the room, because it's just kind of like, because that's, it's such a, it's, you have to acknowledge who you are the minute you step on stage. My opening was for years was I know what you're thinking. I didn't know Liza Minnelli and Bruce Lee had had a child.
I definitely, you know, I have no problem poking fun at myself. I, you know, there's nothing that anyone writes online about me that I'm like, oh my god, I didn't see that in myself. Yeah. I know any diss that's coming my way, I'm like, you're not telling me anything I don't know. So I kind of use it as a way to sort of take that power back a little bit.
Do you read the comments? Do you read the stuff online? Do you read?
Once in a blue moon, but I have no, none of my social media. I have, I don't have, what are they called? Notifications. So I don't. I don't have anything set to, I don't know when someone's written me. I don't know when people have talked about me, and that keep, and I like that. I don't like being constantly aware of, you know, engagement, good or bad.
My husband has a Google alert of me on his computer, but I can't think of anything worse. I don't think my skin is thick enough to like read the comments. My feelings hurt.
I mean, sometimes you just see them because they're just there, but I don't go looking for them.
I love that. I love the distinction, though, like good or bad, because it's really easy for us to get attached to what people believe about us.
Take it personally.
Again, whether it's good or bad, because, you know, if we're looking for validation, then we're going to die by their rejection. So,
If they I'm up. If they hate me, I'm down. It's kind of going to change all the time.
Yes.
I mean, I think I'm lucky in that. Stand-ups versus actors. Stand-ups are on the road all the time. So if you want validation, just do a show and people laugh. Yeah. There's your validation. Actors, you know, aren't. They might seek it out a little bit more because they're not getting that one-on-one. Yeah.
The immediate.
It is an immediate. I do enjoy that. I'm a very reluctant comic. Like on the car ride to the club, I'm like, I don't want to go. And then when I'm on stage, I'm fine.
Right.
You know, but
I'm the same. I don't, there's a lot of comics who live to be on stage.
I'm not one of those people.
I'm not one of those either, actually. I like my job a lot. I do a lot of shows, especially when I was prepping my special. I was for 2 years on the road constantly. But when I'm at home, I'm always kind of like, no, I don't want to do the show. I get asked all the time. And I feel so bad, but I'm like, I just want to be at home with
I'm sad on the road. I get so sad. I'm like in that weird hotel or the apartment, you know, the hotel room with the coffee maker, and you just sit there all day. There's nothing to do. I mean, if you're in town and you know people, then you could go. But on the road, I was terrible. I would eat terrible. I would drink terrible.
It's a hard place. But I've been touring. I've been touring nonstop for like 10 years. So it's just part of my life. This has been the first year. I had my Netflix special came out. I finally moved up to theaters because of the special, and I had 6 months of sold out shows ready to go.
That's amazing.
Well, they were supposed to start March 15th. So I haven't done those yet, but hopefully, you know, late next year I can go back on the road. But this has been sort of a forced hiatus.
How has that been for you, not being able to be up in front of people?
I mean, I'm fine again. Like, I don't need that validation all the time. I'm totally fine off of stage. I don't need to be the center of attention. I just was bummed. In the beginning, it hit me really hard because I had reached this milestone that I had been working towards for so long. I'd been, you know, you always hope as a stand-up to jump from comedy clubs to theaters. That's always sort of the dream.
To Oscar-nominated films.
Exactly. So I felt like I'd finally accomplished this big goal. And I mean, literally the night before I was supposed to leave to start the tour, it all went away.
Oh my gosh.
It took me a little bit to you know, just sort of come to terms with that just not happening right now. But then, you know, you sulk a little bit, but then you think, I'm healthy, I'm at home with my family, I'm okay. There's so many more things that are going on that
you don't brood. You don't brood.
No,
I brood.
I definitely brood in the beginning, mm-hmm. but my brood is like me watching television in a flannel shirt and sweatpants, drinking too much wine. Yeah. So, you know, I eventually got over it, but I sort of retreat, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
I wasn't as like active on social media. I wasn't doing a lot of podcasts. I was just like, let me just take care of my licking my wounds.
Yeah.
And then I'll put myself back out there.
Does that affect your mood at all? Especially for somebody who's, you know, who's been working so hard and has worked a lot too. I've noticed that for obviously a lot of us this past year, we're forced to just sit down and not get to do all of those things and keep ourselves busy in that way. How has that been for you to not have that stuff? Has that impacted your mood at all?
Well, I think I've been, I'm a worker. I love to work. I love it. I love what I do. It's such a huge part of my life and who I am. I don't need to be on stage per se, like I said, but I'm always doing something. If I'm not on stage, that means I'm writing a movie. I'm creating a TV show. I'm doing voiceover. I'm doing radio. I'm doing something in the realm of the business. I'm always trying to create. So I'm never not working. And so to suddenly have the entire world stop and be like, you can't work right,
right
now.
Right.
My whole identity is sort of based around work. So for me, that was hard to be like, God, what, I'm just supposed to sit around?
I know. Like,
I don't know how to do that.
It's a weird feeling. It feels like a breakup. Mm-hmm. When work kind of like stops, it feels like I would always feel like this is a breakup. I feel like somebody broke up with me. Like I'd do a television show or I'd do a play or I'd do a tour of something. And it's just like, now what? It's always like a hard thing to recover from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like even for me, there's things that I would normally do, even if it is for like social media, making videos and talking about mental health stuff and all that. And like, I just have not had the psychic energy, right? Like to even be able to like do work, even if I kind of wanted to try and push myself and hustle a little bit more, like I just don't have the energy for it. And so it's interesting. So then I feel like I feel tired and I don't do as much, but then I also kind of sometimes feel like down or even anxious that I'm not doing more. And so it's this weird kind of fucked up middle.
Yeah. Like you make me feel like a real underachiever right now. Right. Fortune. So thanks a lot for that. You're working on movie scripts. You have like 10 different podcasts. Yeah. And like after this, I'm going to take a nap.
Well, it's probably that thing in me that having not grown up with much money and saying I joke about it in my special, I came from a family that had a lot of money and they lost it all.
Me too.
Right before I was born. And so I saw a family who had, you know, the American dream. Because they were born poor and they made this big thing. And then
I remember that part of your special. I was God, that's same. Yeah. But the difference with me is they lost all of their money when I was 13. Like when I was starting to figure out what money was, we lost everything.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Yeah. So that probably drives me. That's why I do so much, is because I don't want to be in that position.
Yeah.
Like that.
I was just going to say, and probably for both of you, right, to have that experience growing up where I'm sure that was the constant conversation, or at least you saw so much of it, right? Like fear of, you know, money and needing to work hard and work extra hard and all of this stuff because of the relationship to money, that could really inform then, you know, kind of like your own relationship to work and money too.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, when we lost it, we never talked about it and we had to pretend like everything was fine.
Yeah.
We still had to keep up appearances we were embarrassed millionaires.
My mom's the one, because I think it's a big Southern thing. She wanted to keep up appearances as well. So that's why I was a debutante and yada, yada. But, you know, I would go to this two-story house and it was empty. There was like nothing in it.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. So I was definitely driven by not wanting to make the same mistakes that I saw happen. But also my cancer. It's part of if you get hippy dippy, it's part of the thing is this wanting security.
Right.
Part of your horoscope or whatever it's called.
Oh, you're a cancer. We're both cancers. When's your birthday?
July 1st.
Yeah, I'm July 10th. Because that's a big part is like, is home. And I had a huge anxiety because I bought my own house here in LA. And for the first couple of years that I had it, I had the constant anxiety in my head because my parents did lose a gigantic house. I don't have a gigantic house. I have a nice house. I love my house. But my the worst thing that could ever possibly happen, and this is what I had to work through in therapy, was losing the house.
Yeah.
What if I lose this house?
Yep.
What if I, that was like my constant worry. And then some, and then I really looked back, that was attached to my childhood trauma of, I'm going to make the same mistakes my father did.
Yes.
And my therapist finally said, you're not your dad.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen to you because you're not your dad. And I was like, I'd never heard it put that way because I was like, the same thing is going to happen to me.
Totally.
That was the weirdest thing. And for somebody to just come right out and say, you're not your dad, because like as a cancer, that's like the most important thing is like home and like stability. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always like why, when I'm on the road, I just want to go home.
Yeah. Same.
Totally.
Yeah. I'm definitely a homebody, which is so, I like stability and I like home, which is hilarious that I'm a comedian on the road and an actor.
Yeah. I'm a gay Asian actor who wants to be on television. So it's like stability.
Do you remember? But for sure, even those stories, like you were just telling yourself, I'm not my dad, you know, it's so easy for us because when we're younger, we do learn those stories and that feels so much like what we've heard around us. It feels like a part of who we are. And so even those stories, even when it's irrational and negative, just the fact that they are familiar is what makes it really challenging for us to start creating new stories for ourselves because we are inherently averse to anything foreign and unknown. Mm-hmm. And so that's what can be really kind of hard to shed that. Like I remember like growing up, my thing was my parents split up when I was about 5 and, you know, my mom was always kind of like struggling to trying to figure out like how we're supposed to pay for this, how we're supposed to pay for that. And we were very much included in that conversation. I grew up really fearing money, like not even wanting to try to make it or being afraid of the money that I did have. And it was hard for me even to have to kind of unlearn that so then I could actually align myself with what I deserve, the abundance of life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Money's a head game. You know, it is. There are times where my point is when I did in therapy, that was a breakthrough moment. And said, I'm not my dad. I stopped worrying about the house. I just didn't worry about it anymore because I'm not my house. It's just the house. I love this house.
The power of insights.
It would suck if I lost it. I don't want that to happen, but it's not a prevalent thought in my mind anymore. But like mastering money of like getting to the point where it's like, what feels like enough?
Yes.
I always used to live like 6 months in advance.
Yes.
Where am I heading 6 months from now? And if I didn't know, I'd be in a complete panic. And now it's kind of like, whatever.
I remember in my mid-20s when I was in therapy and my therapist started talking to me about my relationship to money and I had never even thought about it as a relationship. Like I just didn't even conceive of it in that way. And just being aware of like, oh, I have this like, you know, kind of toxic relationship with money. So that was something that was very helpful, just being aware of that.
Yeah. I'm really cheap when I'm making money. When I'm on a series, I don't spend a dime.
It's funny how that happens.
I suck it. I mean, I'm living in my series money. I'm living in Ugly Betty money from like 15 years ago. I watched the movie that we did together right before COVID, Chick Fight. Have you watched it?
I did. Yeah, it's fun.
You're really great at it. It's so good.
Yeah, you too. I felt like everybody did a good job. It's one of those movies that's meant to be fun and, you know, that you like again an escape, you know. It's it's one of those movies that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah,
which you play. I like.
You what's your character's name?
Bear. I'm the because it's not a movie based on Fight Club, but it's a movie about women in a fight club. And so I'm the referee of this fight club. So I'm supposed to be really, really tough. I'm I'm tough adjacent. I'm tough, tough enough.
You're tough enough in the movie. You have that. You have a really nice scene in the movie where you show your vulnerable side, and it's very, very sweet. But yeah. we were all together in Puerto Rico, and at one point it was we were filming the end of the movie, so the entire cast was there, and I was we were in between scenes, and I looked at you. And then next to me was Dominique Jackson. And then Kevin Connolly was over there. And then Kevin Nash. And I was like, this is a really cool club. That was really fun.
It was a good group of people. I got there on your last day. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was so exhausted because I was doing press in New York for my special. And my dog had gotten really, really sick and had been in the hospital.
I remember.
3 days. So I had not slept all week. And so I got there, we filmed all day, and you guys all went out to dinner, and I wanted to so bad because I had not gotten to spend much time with everybody. And I was like, I got to go pass out.
I was
bummed not to have that fun, big cast moment with everybody.
My first scene that I shot was a hospital scene, and I had literally flown from Vegas to Puerto Rico, picked up at the airport, and went right to set.
Yeah. Wow.
After having performed the night before.
Whoa.
And I was just kind of like, this is, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And that's why I thought 2020 is my year. I'm going to work that stuff. This is just going to zing.
Yeah. They had a car pick me up in New York at like 3 a.m. and I took the red eye to Puerto Rico and then immediately went to set too. So I was like, they shot the whole movie in 17 days, which is a big feat. To do that.
I
was just glad we shot a movie before the world came to a halt.
They try to make it look like America, so there's just a lot of windows or doors. You don't really see the rest of the street or anything.
Yeah, someone was like, where is this supposed to be set? I was like, I think Miami, but we shot it in Puerto Rico.
So what are you working on right now? Are you just writing for the most part?
Yeah, I'm writing. Yeah. Luckily, I've been doing, I do a radio show for Netflix that's on SiriusXM. And we've been doing it. We do that every morning. And it's been going since.
You and Tom Papa, right?
Mm-hmm, it's called What a Joke. With Pop and Fortune. And we've been doing that every morning since the pandemic. I mean, we were in studio, but we've managed to do it at home, which has been that basically saved my me from really getting down in the dumps. I was getting to connect with people every day. I usually write movies and stuff. We've had sold a couple movies to Amblin. We just finished another movie that we hope to pitch soon, and I just got a new Netflix job as a co-host of this show called After Party.
Mm-hmm.
It's with David Spade and London Hughes. So it'll start airing in January. We're basically, it's all going to gravitate around the Netflix movies and TV shows. We're going to interview cast. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Have you started doing it yet?
I shoot my first thing for them on Friday. So we're.
Who are you going to interview? I'd want to interview all the people in The Crown because I'm obsessed with that show right now.
I don't know who, like every episode, you know, will focus on different Netflix shows. So I don't know who will be coming through. It also, you know, depend on who's available, and we got the whole COVID thing. So some will be in person, some will be on screen, but I'm just excited because Netflix has never had a show like this.
Yeah. Kind of like it sounds like an Andy Cohen type show where you kind of like interview people after the fact. I stalk British baking show contestants that I find hot.
Yeah.
And then I delude myself into thinking that we're actually friends. There was one guy on, I don't know if you watch the show, on season 5 of British Baking Show. Do you watch that show, Matthew?
I've been watching a bunch of it recently.
Season 5, there's a really hot guy, soccer player, gay guy named Tom. And he's so gorgeous. And I've been...
He's beautiful and can bake.
And can bake. I think we should set you guys up. He's so cute.
Oh, there you go.
Can you like take us back to
Matthew single? You're single?
I'm dating somebody.
He's dating somebody.
I am.
For now.
Okay.
For now.
Okay.
For now. I'm curious to know. I don't know if we've had this conversation. Where was the very first place you did stand up? Like, do you remember your very first, like, I'm getting up there and I'm doing this?
Yeah, it was actually at the Comedy Store, which is crazy.
That's the deep end of the pool.
Yeah, I just went, I never did it back home. Everyone assumed I started in North Carolina, but I started in L.A. Mm. I just decided to go to the most difficult place in the world to do stand-up.
Was it the sign-up? Was it the thing where you have to show up at noon and then...
No, I did do the safer route. I did a class. I did a class, and at the end of the six-weeks class, you performed in the belly room of the Comedy Store. So my very first set was at the end of this 6 weeks class.
And how long was the set?
3 minutes. So it was pretty easy to, you know, and in an environment that was more supportive than just like doing a, what is it called?
Open mic.
That's the word. Yeah. and so, so I would go between, so then the belly room became kind of my home base. So I did a show every Sunday night there for like a year and a half.
Wow. Where
I had a stand, the teacher of my class had a show every Sunday night then. And he said, if you do the music while for comics coming up, I'll give you 10 minutes every Sunday night, which was huge when you're a brand new comic to have 10
every
whole minutes
Sunday night at the Comedy Store.
Yeah. For an entire year and a half. So I built up my material really quick. And so I think that's what, cause I started in 2007 in stand up. And then by 2010, I was touring the country headlining.
Wow. That happened fast.
Yeah. Cause I'd got Last Comic Standing. So 2.5 years in that and I became a paid regular at the Comedy Store in 2.5 years. So it was a quick trajectory, which I do think having that stage time all the time was a big deal. Cause when you're a brand new comic, you cannot get 10 minutes. You can get maybe, you know, 5 if you're lucky.
And you can't make a living. Nobody pays you anything.
No. And so I would do that a lot. And then Bruce's show at Akbar was also very helpful too.
Oh, yeah. We did that show. That show freaks me out because it's called Drunk on Stage.
Uh-huh.
That's where we met. And
because
it starts at 7:30, but literally at 7:29, nobody's there.
And no one's there.
No one's there. So I'm there at 7:15 with like my notes and everything ready to go on. I'm like, oh, nobody's coming.
Everyone rolls in at 8. I'm like, why not just, I guess he just knows the gays are going to show up late.
Yeah.
So. Are you actually drunk on stage?
I am.
I wasn't. Well, it was nice to have a mix of like the comedies at the Comedy Store every week, which was very bro-y, very straight, very standard stand-up. And then I have Akbar pretty regularly, which was very alternative, very gay, very do whatever you want. So I got to experiment a lot in both worlds.
Yeah. It was hard for me in bro world. My first set in LA was at the Laugh Factory and I bombed so bad.
Oh, really?
So bad. Like they call it flop sweat for a reason. Like I came on stage and my shirt was, I could wring it out. It was so bad.
Oh, no.
It was an audition for In Living Color. And then we all had to do open mic at Laugh Factory. And it was really like facing a firing squad. But on a happier note, I'm so happy for your success. And anybody who knows you is like, to know you is to love you. And you're always like, you're kind of like, just you let everybody else be themselves. You don't have to be the center of the attention. What I'm scared of when I meet other comics is the person who's always on. That drives me crazy.
There's a lot of those.
Yeah. And that's not you. Cause it's just great. And I hope I get to work with you again real soon. We're nearing the end of our program. And when we end our program, we ask, cause the show's called Hot Mess. We end each show with a hot message. Now, given everything we've been through with the pandemic and people's productivities slowing down, what would be your hot message to the people out there going through that?
Oh man, I mean, right now it's like, I think everybody just has to stay positive. You know, it's been such a tough year and there's so many things that you could get down about. But I think stay, positive, because there are, we're still in the muck of this, and the next couple months are going to be difficult. COVID has not gone away. So continue to be safe, continue to be as diligent about it as you were in the beginning, because a lot of people have been getting it lately. And also keeping positive and working on your own mental health. Take care of yourself. Right now, don't watch the news too much.
Don't watch the news. Don't read the comments. Follow Fortune on Instagram. What I love on your Instagram is you eating ice cream and dancing is just pure joy. What are your socials, Fortune? Where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Fortune Themester. My name. Twitter is at Fortune Funny. I'm always posting silly videos and again the escape thing, doing characters, trying to get people to laugh even for a minute.
I loved you as Sarah Huckabee. There was nothing better.
So good.
I love when you do drag,
and I love you yelling at your husband Tim.
Brenda. Tim. Well, before I started stand up, I studied at the Groundlings for 7 years, some of that simultaneous. And so I have this whole world of characters and sketches that no one even ever knew about. So it's been fun in the pandemic to bring out some of these old sketches and old characters. For the old Insta.
For the socials. Thank you so much for doing this show, Fortune. Yes, it's great to see you.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah. Congratulations on your continued success. We'll see you soon. Bye.
All right. Bye you guys. Thank you.
She's so cool.
Yes.
I want to be her. I want to be Fortune. I mean, the thing is, like, not everybody has kind of a positive outlook naturally.
No,
Some of us have to work at it.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would say, I guess, you know, maybe my
hot message. Hot message?
My hot message for the day. You know, it's kind of inspired by the positivity that Fortune brings at her shows and even here today. But it's about just kind of like keeping in mind, you know, especially when we're talking about productivity. Favorite quote, one of my favorite quotes, stop the glorification of busy. You know, we live in a world that constantly is, you know, kind of pumping out that, you know, I'm hustling. Oh my God, I'm so tired. You know, I'm, you know, working so much. We wear it like a badge of honor. And this year, if nothing else, has forced us to get still and learn how to get still and be able to frame things positively. This is something that's happening for us, not to us.
Yeah. The world's not going to end if you don't write a Pulitzer Prize winning novel.
That's right.
During this, I really am taking a nap after this. my hot message of the day is kind of be kind to yourself.
Please.
Think that, you know, that kind of relentless driving, if that was a person outside of you, you'd be like, go away, you're a crazy person. And yet we're perfectly fine saying mean stuff to ourselves in our head. And by people, I mean me. I mean, I'm really, really mean. And sometimes it makes me laugh. That's why my affirmation is, I'm not so bad.
It's a good one.
Solid affirmation. That's how I need that. Where can we find you on your social medias, Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at MJ Dempsey Psych and Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook.
You can find me at Alec Mop on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us both at the Hot Mess Pod on Twitter and Facebook. No, Twitter and Instagram. We're the Hot Mess Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Somebody left me a message the other day, said, do you and Matthew get along? Because you seem like you're always at odds with him. And I said, no, I love Matthew. I love him. I wouldn't.
Is that how we come across?
I don't know.
Oh.
Do we?
I don't know. I think we get along great.
I adore you.
I adore
you. And we adore you for listening.
We do.
Thank you so much. Don't forget to download and subscribe to the Hot Mess Podcast. And we'll see you next week. We're so thankful and grateful that you chose to spend your time with us. Tune in next week for more Hot Mess fun.
Bye, everybody. This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.